Hello and welcome to this podcast with your host, Paul Miller. Today I talk with George Rees. George is CTO of Instratus. We discuss Instratus and then take a broader look at the whole area of cloud security. Specifically, we talk about cloud audits and some of the ways in which these might increase confidence for customers looking to use cloud services. For more information on this show and others in this series, please see the show notes at cloudofdata.com. Thank you. George, thank you very much for joining me for this podcast today. Before we get into some of the detail around the cloud and whether or not it's secure, can you tell listeners a bit about yourself and your own background, please?
Sure. Well, first, thanks for having me on today. I am the author of Cloud Application Architectures. I'm also CTO of Instratus. I have a long background in doing enterprise-type application development, especially working with technologies like Java and MySQL, written a few books on those. Running a startup that I had founded called Valtera that was doing some software as a service type stuff. And we started moving that company into the cloud and building out a whole bunch of tools to support its operations in the cloud, and ended up having a lot of people come to us and say, hey, we're interested in those tools that you're deploying your stuff with. So we spun that off as Instratus in sometime in 2008, and we've been going and growing ever since then. But essentially, Instratus is a cloud management system delivered both in a software as a service model and an on-premise model that focuses on governance issues with respect to cloud infrastructure management, in particular things like security and financial controls.
Okay, and you mentioned that Instratus is both on-premise and delivered software as a service. So presumably when it comes to this, you know, current hot topic of whether or not clouds are public, private, or hybrid, Instratus would say all of the above.
Exactly, yes.
And you're quite happy, comfortable with that?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I think we'll get a little bit more into this a little later in the discussion. But, you know, I think the future world is hybrid cloud. I think that the whole, you know, there's certainly a bunch of people who think that, you know, private cloud is the stepping stone to public cloud. And I think for a variety of reasons, that's nonsense. I think that private cloud is a natural first step for companies who have a core competency in doing virtualization, that have a significant infrastructure investment in a virtualized infrastructure. But for everyone else, private cloud's a pretty hard thing to do. And so, you know, for the people who do have private cloud makes sense for, it's going to be both private and public cloud. But I think, you know, when we look at the year 2020, you're going to see a surprise. I think a lot of people will be surprised by the number of companies that are pure public cloud and I would expect pure public cloud to actually represent multiple public cloud presences.
Presumably, we're not quite in a position to enable that yet, simply because of the differences between the public clouds.
Well, you know, in Stratus, one of the things we do is allow you to operate across multiple public clouds today. Now, you know, we can't change the laws of physics and make data instantaneously available in two very different cloud infrastructures, but we can do things like cloud bursting from the private cloud into the public cloud, automated DR from one public cloud to another, and where the architecture of the application will support it, actually do auto scaling across multiple public clouds.
So are you seeing a particular type of customer that's coming to Instratus looking for those sorts of requirements?
You know, right now, the people looking for multiple cloud solutions tend to be on the enterprise side that are either interested in having a single view across their private and public cloud or multiple public clouds, not so much as, you know, if they're doing operations across a single deployment across multiple clouds, it's more in the context of having, you know, component A in one cloud and component B in another cloud. You know, for example, one of our customers doing e-commerce has most of their, you know, web-facing stuff sitting out in the Amazon cloud, but their actual e-commerce stuff sitting in a private cloud that's PCI certified. So that's really where the cross-cloud operations is working today.
Okay, that makes sense. Good. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk to you about today is security in the cloud. If you were to read the mainstream business press and the mainstream technology press, you would assume that the cloud isn't secure. You would assume that every CIO on the planet is kept up at night, terrified that the cloud isn't secure. And you would assume that no one in their right mind would ever put anything important in the cloud.
Yep.
Is that true?
Well, you know, there are two ways to answer that question, and I'll start with the frightening answer to that question. The frightening answer to that question is, you know, stop even talking about the cloud in that context. The internet is insecure and frighteningly insecure. So if you're worried about, you know, security from that perspective, you need to cut all your connections to the internet, and not even just the internet, you know, with shared high bandwidth lines. And you know, Chris Hoff has an excellent and, you know, very well-respected presentation called Cloud of Fornication, where he talks about how the very infrastructure on which the entire internet is built on is insecure. And the point there isn't that people really should disconnect from the internet, but the core security problems that face cloud computing aren't actually different for the cloud than they, let me put it this way, that there are some core infrastructural security issues with the internet that we seem to ignore today and just either not know about, ignore, or I don't know, stick our heads in the sand about, and instead we get focused on this idea of cloud security as if it's a special breed. And, you know, so if you forget the stuff that Hoff is talking about, which is, you know, endemic to the internet and not particular to the cloud. And by internet, I mean any system you've got connected to the internet, not simply if you've got a cloud technology out there. If you've got your internal, you know, network via firewall connected to the internet, or if you're using VPN, or if you have some sort of high-speed connection between your, you know, U.S. office and Europe office, you've got a problem with those issues. And regardless of whether you're using cloud computing or not, so. When it comes to cloud computing, the real issues aren't technical. Cloud doesn't really introduce new security problems. It introduces new ways we think about responsibility for security. Because, you know, two things. One is that you've got another organization who's responsible for part of your infrastructure in a way that's different than traditional managed services, and it's being done on a commodity basis, which means that it's a little more difficult for even, you know, the best intentioned cloud provider to provide full transparency into that infrastructure. So the challenges of cloud computing really rely on how do you make sure you have the visibility you need into the cloud provider infrastructure and can validate that that'll meet your needs. The cloud provider itself is going to be as secure or more secure or less secure depending on what they're doing. The challenge is knowing which of the three they are. But there's nothing inherently more secure or less secure about cloud computing than anything else.
Okay, although presumably the scale of cloud data centers raises some concerns. It's not simply my small company and its data center that no one's really interested in hacking. It's a massive agglomeration of lots of data from lots of people, and therefore it presents a more compelling target on the network. Is that fair?
I'd say, you know, when it comes to things like distributed denial of service attacks, yeah, it does. And certainly if you take a naive approach to cloud computing and don't take some institute some basic defensive controls on your data, you know, you, especially when you get to the software as a service layer, you could, you know, be a tag along in a very significant larger attack against the target company. So let's say you have SaaS vendor X that has a massive breach. You know, and a good example would be Google. About a year ago, I think it was, had a software bug in the Google Doxing that exposed private documents to, you know, essentially the world. So in that sense, there certainly are some concerns relating to the scale, but you know, there are also basic defensive controls you can put in place that make that not so important.
And presumably these large data centers are employing better IT people than I could in my small company. So although it's a bigger target, it's a better protected target.
At a general level, I would say yes. At a more, you know, but I would say never assume that. I would say you need the visibility into what your cloud provider is doing so that you can feel reasonably comfortable that yes, they know what they're doing on a security perspective. Just because they're a cloud provider doesn't in itself mean that they have a clue as to what they're doing.
So sticking cloud on your website isn't the way to badge it as being secure. You know,
exactly.
I'm a cloud provider, therefore I'm okay.
Exactly.
If I'm a small company then, looking at cloud providers, or even a large company looking at cloud providers, how can I tell whether they're secure or not? Because, I mean, we've had cases recently with the Financial Services Authority here in the UK, which essentially requires that banks and other financial institutions physically inspect any data center they're going to use. Now that works if it's an off-site hosting provider just down the road. It's less likely to work if it's Amazon's data center in Washington, somewhere in Washington state. You know, they're not going to let the bank manager walk in and have a look at the servers.
Right.
So how can I tell whether they are doing what they should?
Well, I'm involved in an effort called Cloud Audit, and one of the objectives of Cloud Audit is, and I'm probably completely rephrasing the organization's mission here, but essentially it is to provide a standard way for cloud providers to communicate what they're doing from a security, governance, compliance perspective to their customers in a way that is easily consumable by the customers, whether it's, you know, human readable or not. So, for example, if you're in a regulated industry or an industry that is covered by some common compliance framework, you can look to, you know, whoever your desired cloud provider is, and look at their cloud audit, publication, and say, okay, here's my compliance framework. Do they have a response along that compliance framework, and what is, you know, and what are the controls that they have in place? And ideally, you know, the cloud provider you're looking at has a cloud audit response for the control framework that you want, and it's and what Cloud Audit does is make sure that it can that the response is something that you can understand and then make an informed decision as to whether this, you know, cloud provider is going to meet my needs or not. Obviously, with some specifications like HIPAA or, you know, you require, there's more than just reading a cloud audit response and saying okay, but it does form the basis of transparency that you'll need to make an informed decision. And then if you need further legal discussions, get in the legal discussions around. And hopefully that will lower the cost of providing transparency for these cloud providers and, you know, increase the focus on by consumers on getting transparency and getting transparency that matters to their requirements rather than some goofy checklist that some third party deemed they should have.
Okay, good. And presumably there's scope there as well for some bringing some sense to the compliance frameworks that we work within as well. So, for example, the Financial Services Authority with their requirement that essentially anyone wanting to use a cloud provider physically inspect their data center, to turn that around and essentially say that the cloud audit requires that someone trusted has inspected the data center. So perhaps a bank does rather than every bank.
Yeah, and obviously, if the UK regulation's written in such a way that you have to inspect it, there's nothing a cloud provider or a cloud audit can do to mitigate that. But if, you know, cloud audits plus what's, you know, for example, what CSA is doing with respect to developing best practices and guidance around cloud security operations. You know, if those reach a certain level of maturity, then it becomes easier for regulatory agencies to back off on some of the more onerous things and allow for something like what you're talking about.
Yeah, but we're not totally there yet.
No, we're not there yet.
So, I mean, in terms of these compliance frameworks, which clearly are very important in the financial space, in the health space, in education, and in any number of other sort of markets which are potentially quite profitable, how do we decide where the onus of responsibility falls between, you know, the customer and the cloud providers in terms of working out who needs to do what about making the system secure?
That's a really, really good question, and I don't think that stops even at the security level. You know, we get customers, for example, that of Instratus who have, you know, bugs in their application code that cause them downtime, and then they wonder why anybody at Instratus didn't do anything about it. And there is, especially at the SMB level, a fundamental lack of understanding where, you know, the responsibility of the cloud provider versus the cloud management tool provider versus their own software ends. And I think as one of the side effects of making technology more accessible that the cloud does, means that people who haven't been in operations in the past suddenly can get involved with operations, which means we'll see people doing, you know, I used the case of an application layer bug, but it could have been an application layer security hole, for example. And I think that, you know, you're going to have to see an evolution on all three parts of, you know, the management providers. I think we're going to have to get more into analyzing the applications for security flaws, for example, as our, you know, as the Instratus part of the industry involves. At the infrastructure as a service layer, I think, you know, there's going to be a lot more responsibility on the infrastructure as a service layer to be a lot more fault tolerant in their infrastructures. And in the end, we want to get to the point where, you know, people are saying essentially, here's my code, here are the dependencies. Hey, Instratus, figure out the infrastructure that should be working on based on my uptime and compliance requirements. We're certainly a long, long way from there. And as a result, you know, we've got, we're going to have a world in which people, you know, have these bugs, and some of them are security problems that are, that they may not be ready to deal with because of the greater accessibility that cloud providing has provided us.
And I guess the danger there, especially for the larger cloud providers, you know, an Amazon, a Google, a Rackspace, the danger there is that where one of these SMBs has put an application into the cloud with security holes in it, and yep. that application is then hacked, you know, it's not mom and pop's bakery that's been hacked on the front page of the Wall Street Journal, it's Amazon that was hacked, despite the fact that Amazon actually did nothing wrong.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, when I'm in a particularly smart-ass mood and somebody asks me about security in the cloud, you know, my response, my tongue-in-cheek response is often, stop writing SQL injection vulnerabilities and then talk to me about the security of your cloud providers. But, you know, I think, you know, in the end, the biggest security problem is always at the application tier, and that's the easiest. You know, if I'm a hacker and I want to go after somebody, the easiest thing for me to do, you know, first is to execute some sort of, you know, human factor exploit. The next thing is to go after vulnerabilities in the application itself. People don't go, first thing think, okay, I'm going to go after the cloud provider, or I'm going to go after their IT infrastructure. That's just not the primary attack vector.
Indeed. So if I am an organization that has applications and I'm looking to move them to the cloud, presumably I look at the cloud security audit for the providers I'm thinking of using and then begin to move out. What particular security considerations should I be looking at above and beyond what I should be doing anyway within the organization?
Well, I think the things that cloud really introduces that are unique to the cloud is all of these jurisdictional concerns relating to the separation of duties between you're the company that owns the application and the data, and your partner, your cloud partner, is a separate organization that may be under a separate jurisdiction, that may be keeping your data in a separate jurisdiction, and how do you reconcile that? And you know, one of the simplest stories is things like third-party subpoenas. So this is a factor, an artifact of multi-tenancy, is that let's say you're running in some cloud provider and you happen to have your data being stored on the same, you know, storage device or in the same server instance as somebody who's doing bad things. And so that person who's doing bad things gets sued, and the person suing them, you know, goes through the cloud provider for discovery, and there's an overly broad subpoena that shouldn't be allowed, but somehow or another an ignorant judge allows it, and suddenly the person suing the bad guy has access to your data and you don't even know about it. Those are the sorts of security questions that cloud introduces that we really haven't had to deal with that much before. And, you know, in the managed services world, we sort of had this deal, but, you know, a lot of times, these issues were limited because you were on dedicated servers or something like that. But because we're in this multi-tenant environment where all the multi-tenancy is handled elastically at a virtualization layer in a lot of cases, it becomes easier for the courts to ask for everything. And so how do you defend yourself against that sort of scenario?
How do you defend yourself against that sort of scenario?
Well, it depends on what layer of the the cloud you're dealing with, it's really, really hard at the SaaS layer to deal with it because you have very little control over the data. And yes, organizations like Salesforce.com do offer you the ability to encrypt the data, but they do so with them holding the keys to the encryption. So if they're the target of a subpoena, for example, they have both the encrypted data and the keys, and so you're still in the same boat. Obviously, it does help against certain kinds of external attack, but against legal things, it doesn't help that much. So at the infrastructure layer, you have a lot more control. You can, encrypt the file systems, use tools like InStratus to do the key management and automate the encryption and decryption of the data. And that'll give you a layer of organizational separation that prevents something like that from happening.
And what sort of overhead does this encrypting and decrypting of data put on any application you might be running?
File system encryption is not a cheap option. It comes with significant overhead. So you don't want to just do it, as a rule of thumb. You can take some steps to mitigate that. You can, InStratus will raid your EBS volumes, and raiding EBS volumes tends to offset the overhead associated with encrypting the file systems. The downside is that they're more prone to failure than regular EBS volumes. But the answer is to focus on encrypting, at the file system level, at least, only the stuff that needs encrypting. I'm a fan of SSL for everything at the network layer, by the way. I think it's a different answer at the network layer, but at the file system layer, definitely encrypt only that which needs to be encrypted.
And does that raise any further legal concerns? I mean, the examples we've seen, for example, with BlackBerry in the Middle East recently, where the Saudi government's essentially saying, it's not fair, you're encrypting your data, so we can't snoop on it. does that come into play in the cloud space as well?
Not today, but I bet it will in the future. I mean, right now, BlackBerry is getting the attention because it's telecommunications, and government is particularly sensitive to encryption of telecommunications, not so much data storage. I do think, though, that as more and more data starts getting in the cloud and government entities start finding, hey, these people are encrypting their data in the cloud and I don't know how to get at it, they're going to start caring more. I mean, today, when it comes to internet communications, they can always, I assume government have ways of forging, getting access to the root certificate or something like that, and decrypting your internet communications. But when it comes to stuff stored on a disk or something like that that's been encrypted using strong encryption with your encryption keys, that's an entirely different matter. And, it just isn't on the minds of governments today. But like I said, as the world is more and more cloud oriented, and as more and more people in the cloud start encrypting their data, governments are going to start, getting nasty. Governments tend to have the attitude that that we can keep stuff secret from you, but you can't keep stuff secret from us.
Yeah, but that's because government is always the good guy, didn't you know?
Right.
I mean, certainly the US government view on a lot of this stuff causes frequent concern here in Europe. Sort of the spectre of the Patriot Act is frequently mentioned whenever anyone talks about moving data to a US-based server, despite the fact that actually the US government usually isn't interested in our data.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because the sort of data that's protected by EU privacy rules really isn't the sort of stuff that the U.S. government would care about. But, and the other thing is the provisions of the Patriot Act have been, you know, matter of law in most European countries anyways, prior to the Patriot Act. So it's just, it's something new to the United States. Now, having said that, you know, you're never going to get around the fact, regardless of a particular law or not, that governments are very sensitive about, you know, what other governments might be doing with respect to data of their citizens. And, you know, whether you know, if the U.S. were to repeal the Patriot Act tomorrow, the reality is that, you know, the U.S. government's going to go after the data it's interested in, regardless of what servers it's located on and what country it's in. And that's the same for European governments. That's the same for Israeli government, the Russian government, the Chinese government. You know, where the servers are located really don't matter to these governments. And there's some reason to believe that at least significant layers of encryption have been broken by a number of these governments as well. I heard one theory as to why Saudi Arabia and the UAE are particularly sensitive to the BlackBerry encryption is simply because they haven't been able to break it, and governments like the U.S. have, and that's why we don't make a stink about it. But the reality today is regardless of how, you know, silly or unsilly these laws may be, or what you believe about them, the fact is they're going to be there for a long time. And if you're putting stuff in the, if you're a business putting data in the cloud, you need to be sensitive both to the rules and regulations in the country you operate in, but also where your customers themselves are.
Which becomes increasingly complicated, both as our business becomes more global, but also as we use some of the cloud providers who essentially can't tell you where the data is going to be at any given time.
You know? Yeah, I think that cloud providers are going to have to become better and better at giving you, a hint as to where your data is. And one of the things, you know, Instratus does is it tries to flag the jurisdiction in which your data is being subject to when you're operating in there. And Cloud Audit is providing mechanisms for cloud providers to provide visibility as to where they're storing your data. And you know, our objective is to enable somebody deploying an application to specify, you know, what jurisdictions that they're working with, and have all of that get automated so that you as the application deployer don't have to worry about the ins and outs of where can I put my data.
So is this a value add, you know, where those people who do care or who have to care about these things effectively pay for a premium service, or is it going to increasingly come for free to everyone?
I think today it's a bit of a premium. I think it's going to have to be a baseline, certainly within the next 5 to 10 years, if not sooner. I guess in the medium term, it's going to have to become more of a baseline thing because it's going to have to matter. I think at someday we'll get to the point where, where Europeans and Americans and Australians aren't butting heads over, where data of our citizens can go, and we're more concerned about, you know, the people who might be using that data to do danger to us.
Yes, and I think it's both people who might be doing bad things with the data, but also in terms of applying rules and roles to the security more sensibly. The physical location of the tin shouldn't matter so much as the jurisdiction under which the data was created and the jurisdictions under which an individual is seeking to access it, surely.
Exactly. The thing is that a European citizen should expect that anybody who is doing business in the EU should protect their data in accordance with EU privacy laws, even if they're storing it in the United States. That's where we should get to be, not to where we're concerned that the data is being stored in the United States.
Yeah, and how far away from that are we?
Oh, I think in the short term, we're getting further and further away from that, because I think there's, right now we're in the middle of this fight as to what it means to have privacy in the digital world, and we don't know the answer to that. And so, we get a lot of knee-jerk responses, like worrying about where the data is stored and stuff like that. And we're going to, continue to oscillate between greater privacy, privacy theater, and actual sensible rules to help privacy until we sort out the question as a world culture, what does privacy mean to us in a digital age?
Yes, which may take some time and presumably requires legislative input as well, which means it'll take even longer.
Yep.
Well, good. So you've got a job for life then at Instratus.
Yeah, we like to think so. We're more than worried about the security aspects, but obviously given everybody's security concerns, that's one of the things that people first think about when they think about us.
Yeah. So a lot of what we've talked about potentially sounds quite scary. And almost supports my sort of flippant comment earlier on about how no one should ever go to the cloud. but actually, I think what you've said is essentially that so long as a company is taking due care and essentially extending the proper processes they should have had in place inside their own organization anyway, there's value to have and there's safety enough and security enough for most of what they might want to do.
Yeah, exactly. And, I think what it really comes down to is, let's say I'm, in marketing and I'm thinking about deploying a thing, some sort of application, and I absolutely know my IT doesn't care about security practices or anything like that. I have the choice of them and I have a choice of a cloud provider that I know is secure. If I'm more concerned about appearances than actual security of the application, I may elect to choose my internal IT, just because if they screw up on the security, that's their problem. If the cloud provider screws up on the security, I, as the marketing guy who made the decision, gets blamed for that. And I think that's why we see a lot of people talking about security, even though, the issues that they're generally concerned with aren't terribly important in the scheme of things. It's probably a better way to put it.
Okay. Yeah. They're not as serious as they might be painted to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Better. That's a much better way to put it.
Okay. Good. And these cloud audits we were talking about are part of a way of beginning to mitigate some of those concerns as well. They perhaps will flag up what the real concerns might be.
Yeah, exactly. And cloud audit, it's at cloudaudit.org. It's a standards organization for how you communicate this data. I strongly recommend people look into it, get involved with it. But that hopefully will provide you with the transparency so that you don't feel like you're going to get fired because you made the decision to go in the cloud because it'll provide you with the tools to do your due diligence and identify a cloud provider, so that if there is an issue, it's actually an issue of them lying rather than you making a bad decision.
Okay, good. That's been an interesting journey around the horrors of cloud security, and perhaps they're not as horrible as people might think. So that's been very useful, George. Thank you. And I've got a load of notes to include in the show notes as well. So thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thank you.